You're about to hear the Daf Yomi on Masechet Chulin from Daf Cycle number 12 in the year Tovshin Ayin Aleph. It'll be followed by a rapid review enabling you to get a quick glimpse of the Daf, and then I'm going to replay you the Daf from the 11th cycle from the year 2004, which you might enjoy more because of a different ambience and different participants. Enjoy. Today's Daf in Chulin is Daf Tet, and we were holding in various things that Rav Yehuda quoted Rav in standard usages. Now we have Rav Yehuda, remember Rav Yehuda also learned by Shmuel. We have some of the things that Rav Yehuda quoted Shmuel that has to do directly with the Inyanim of Shechita to bring us straight back into the Dinim of Shechita. So we are now on the seventh line down. And we're at Amr Viramar Shmuel, Kol Tabak, Sheino Yodea Hilchot Shechita, Asur Lachol Mishechitato. Now this has to do, of course, with the sugya that we touched on briefly earlier in understanding the nature of the Mishnah, the two approaches of Ravina, Muchzakin versus Mumchim, or Mumchim versus Muchzakin. What is the status of the diploma when it comes to Shechita? And what is the status of the fact that we know that he's done Shechita? Now there we were talking about the assumption. Somebody who does Shechita, can you rely on the fact that he's assumed to know the halachot? But how about if he doesn't know the halachot? So here says Shmuel that a tabach that does not know Hilchot Shechita, you're not allowed to eat from his Shechita. And when I say Hilchot Shechita, what I mean is the five biggies. Elohim, Hilchot Shechita, Shihiya, which we already spoke about, which is the waiting in the middle of the act of Shechita, which turns the first part of the act in the event that you're cutting the esophagus, it turns the first part of the act into a tarfus bialma, because that esophagus with a cut in it is a trefa. Drisa, and that drisa is the downward pressure as opposed to cutting back and forth action to be properly defined later. Chalada is the same as the Lashon Chulda, which is something that burrows underground. This is a knife that isn't exposed at the time of Shechita. Hagrama is the turning of the hand slightly out of whack, so that it's not in the exact place of the Shechita, meaning in terms of the place on the neck, up or down, if the animal's hanging. The ikur. Ikur is a very big question, major machlokas. What precisely ikur is, which is remarkable. The problem is that the word is used a different way. So ikur basically means that the simen is ripped. Now, that could mean, the way the Bahag learns, is that the simen is not in place. You shecht it, but you're not shechting it so while it's in its normal channel. Now, that has nothing, the problem with that is, of course, that is like the shechita that you're doing. It's the question of where the simen is. If the simen is in the wrong place, wouldn't that be hagroma? I mean, what? Okay, but in any event, we're going to get to these things later. That's how the Bahag learns. Tosis learns ikur means that there was a ripping effect of the knife, not a drisa effect of the knife, which is what happens when there's a notch in the knife. So that is considered to be oker. Rashi learns that it means pulling it out after shechting one simen, you pull out the other simen from its connected place, which was very problematic because then you never did a shechita. When it's not a psulim, the shechita, as Tosfos says, what does that have to do with it? You just didn't check that simen. Okay, again, these are questions we'll discuss in detail later on, but ikur is the one thing that is not quite clear. It may be literally up in the air. Maika mashron. So, what is the chiddush in that? If each and every one of these cases happens to be a Mishnah in which we learn that, and of course, depending on how you define ikur, you're going to find a different Mishnah for each of them. But the truth is that every one of these cases is specifically addressed in a Mishnah later on, as we'll see. We certainly don't need Shmuel to teach us Mishnayot. Kulu tenino. I mean, and obviously, if the guy doesn't know what he's doing, I mean, how can we possibly do Shechita? Ah, the chiddush over here is that in reference to the sugya we had earlier about a mukhs, so albeit that a mukhsik over there was talking about a case where we would assume that he knew Hilchot Shechita, but are you quite certain that a mukhsa, where we know for a fact that he's not a mumcha, wouldn't be sufficient? I mean, the fact is people get into the swing of doing things correctly. They have a lot of practice, and we've watched them 100 times. There's never been a problem in a shechita. So that's the question. So lo tzricha, we have a chazaka. Not a shachat levin or shnayim, shalosh probably, or a million times for that matter. And every single time he does it right. Can you assume that he will do it right? So we're shachat shaper. So you might think that, look, you know, you don't have to know the facts to do it right. The point over here is that in the event, the question isn't whether he'll do it right. The point is that accidents happen. So Bishlema, if he knows what he's doing, he will not feed us that accident. But if he doesn't know what he's doing, so then we've got a problem, because Zinni Deshai Vidar, something might happen. And Veloyada, he will not even pay attention to what happened, not even realizing the significance of that minor thing. And in fact, that Pasal Deshchita completely. Therefore, we always believe as far as Gamtid. And because of that, we need to be careful about his knowledge of reporting it when it happens. V'yom Rav Yeram Yishmuel, HaTabach, Tzarech Sheyivdok B'Simanim Le'achar Shchita. The truth is that because Shchita is kosher b'rov, and that is oftentimes the case that you just shechted the rov, you need to look at the simonim after Shchita to make certain that you did get all the way through the rov. V'yom Rav Yosef Amanan Tanami Tanina. Well, I don't think that we need Shmuel to teach me that. It's quite clear from the following, which we're going to have in the Mishnah later on, Rabbi Shimon Omer, the Shiur of Shehiya, and this is just sort of a throwout line, is Kedei Bikur. If you were Shoheh in the Shechita, the amount of time that it takes to check, I mean, what do you mean check? Check what? My love, I assume that's what you mean. Kedei Bikur Simanim. Which of course is done, and anybody who's watched Shechita will see that immediately after the Shechita, the Simanim are pressed out, forced to open in order to make sure that you have the Rov. So what is it? It takes literally a tenth of a second. To do that, but so that must be what he's talking about. Kedei bikur. Omalei Abai, no. Hachem Rabbi Yochanan. The point of there is not bikur simanim. The point of there is kedei bikur chacham. We're going to see later on that there is a halacha that the chacham ha'ir, and this is a takana for the kavod of the chacham. It's not really a takana for kashrut, but. I mean, it's become, obviously, if somebody needs to give a hashgacha, then it becomes part of that hashgacha. I need to make sure that the sakinim are being carefully checked, and I'll come in and I'll make surprise visits to look at the sakin. So that became the sign of the level of the kashrut in the community. Rav comes in, everything stops, the sheikh did come with their knives, the Rav checks each sakin as he comes in, but it's also become a way in which to be mechabed the chacham. So even if somebody... As our president was telling us yesterday, they used to get in Middleborough, they used to get all the people to come and collect from the yeshivas. The Panavish Rav would come, the various yeshivas would come. But whenever they would come, everyone would stand in line and bring the sakin to be checked, because that's the simon of the covet for the chacham. This is takon for kvod of shachacham. That's what it's referring to. The shehiya, that it takes, the amount of time that it would take for the chacham to check the knife. Oh, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, you can't have the vertical shiurim. I mean, the whole point of giving a shiur is that that's the shiur. You're telling me that, of course, I mean, it depends. The chacham may be next door, the chacham may be across the street. I mean, what kind of shiur is that? Till the time gets... No, I'm using the word bikur chacham as a shortcut to referring to the checking of the knife. That's the point. Obviously, we mean here where there is no other chacham, where the tabach himself is the chacham. So how long does it take him to check his knife? That's the point. So that amount of time, and we're going to see that that's not so simple. That has to be done on different surfaces of your skin and nail. So there, it's a real shear of shihia, and it's not natat advarach l'shiurim, because it's the guy who's doing the bedika on his own knife, even though, as Rishonim points out, I mean, a knife could be a big knife, could be a small knife, and so on. The shear that we're referring to is the knife defined later on, which is the width of the neck and kamali tzavar besides, which of course is nogea, the shear of movement, back and forth movement, in terms of how much knife will cover how much space per penetration, per millimeter of penetration, because otherwise, how do you define drisa? Well, if I'm moving it 1 millimeter and I'm penetrating, 2 centimeters, is that considered to be drisa, or is that considered to be cutting? So that's part of what we define later. Now, how about if lo badak? You went ahead, did the shechita, you assumed that you did it okay, you did not look at the simanim, so you don't know really that you did rov, but you're assuming that you did rov. Can you rely on that? No. This animal is therefore a trefa. For all intents and purposes, you cut the esophagus, and therefore, boom. And it's a surabachila. Bimatznita Tana. What do you mean a treif? It's an avela. It's a dead animal. You don't tell him you don't know if you shechted it, because it wasn't checked. So it would even be matame like an avela, which means that even for carrying it, not coming into contact with it, which is called tumat masa as opposed to tumat manga, there's no negia. It would also be matame, which is a chomor tuma. So what is the machloket based on? B'maika miflege. It's based on an understanding of the implications, fantastically important, which we'll get on to later on, as implications all over Shas. It has to do with the nature of chazaka, essentially. Because, look, the whole thing is built around Rav Huna's point. Rav Huna says, Yom Rav Huna, bottom line is that a behema b'chayah is b'cheskat isur omer. You start off with an animal at the first moment of its life being us. Why? Because it's Eber Min HaChai. So the very fact that it isn't shechted, it means that you're dealing with an entity that is Asur Bachi. Until you can show me that that status changed, we need to determine the halachic position in terms of the chazaka. That's one of our principles. We do not change the status of Isur V'Heter unless that status has been demonstrated to have been changed. And that would be true Lakula as well. Once you define something in a particular way, it remains that way until you could show me that something has changed. So there's an inertia to the psalm. So the moment that it's born, it's becheskes Yisroel, and it's achiva dalaka b'man ishkita, until you know for a fact the facts of the shkita. Was this, what did you use? Where's the knife? What did you cut? How were you matur? Nishkita, once, however, it was shechted, and if you want to asr it, you're going to have to prove to me that it is asr. Arei becheskat heter, and we stick to its presumed status of heter. Ad shivadalacha b'man nitrefa, until we know for a fact, you can show me that it was actually trefa. Now, of course, this is fascinating because when you say b'man nitrefa, you seem to be saying that I can subsequently, ex post facto, aser it. Well, obviously it needs to be a trefa before. But I'm going to assume that for some reason it wasn't a trefa before, because now it was nishkata. But it wasn't nishkata if it was the trefa, at least not to be matur. This seems to run into a paradoxical situation. So the Gemara is going to ask what this is actually referring to. But let's take a look at the implications of Rav Huna's din for the nevela. Here the question is this. Obviously a live animal is not a nevela, in which case there was never a chazaka that this animal was tame. It was only a chazaka this animal was osur. Now, to what extent do we abstract the impact of the chazaka? Is it that the chazaka tells us how to define the current status based on the fact that we can't assume there was a change? So an animal that was an Eber Min HaChai that is dead and wasn't shechted is matame. So you're telling me it's still what it was. Okay, but now it's dead, so therefore it's also an avela. Or do we say, well, hold on a second. We don't know it's an avela. All we know is you're not allowed to eat it. The fact that you're not allowed to eat it doesn't tell me that it wasn't shechted. It just tells me I'm not allowed to eat it because I can't prove it was shechted. So it's an abstraction. We can't utilize a cheskas iser to tell me a cheskas tuma. There wasn't any cheskas tuma. It's not the cheskas iser has somehow changed the way that we evaluate the reality. We're not saying, aha, clearly he didn't check rov. I mean, that's ridiculous. We have no idea whether he did check rov or he didn't check rov. All we can say is, there is no way that we can say that you're allowed to eat this animal. But we certainly are not going to say the animal's an avela either. So there's two very different ways of looking at this. And therefore, one man di amar holds, look, mar sava, it was becheskas iser, okay? If it's becheskas iser, then now it's dead. Now tell me how a dead animal that wasn't shechted is not metame. Hashta metahi. Umar sava, now wait a minute. It's becheskas iser, not becheskas tuma. So becheskat isur amrina. Why would we say becheskat tuma? Becheskat tuma lo amrina. It doesn't even bother. I mean, wouldn't we sort of, I mean, doesn't it look a little funny that we, I mean, it's dead, but it's usur, but it's not enough. I mean, should we make like a takana? That's normally what we would do, is we would say, okay, treat it like an avail. At least been a rabbana. Says Tosis, because most of the time it's perfectly kosher. The only problem here is that there's a chazaka. But we're going to change the rov because of the chazaka. It's something that the chazaka doesn't impact. On the contrary, we want it to be very clear what's happening here. We need to separate the halakhas. Obviously, 90% of the time, the guy shechted. The only problem is that's not enough to take off the yisr. You need to know what takes off an yisr. That's the point. So becheskat yisurim and becheskat tumah lo harmi. Gufa. Let's just take a look a little more closely at the language of Ravuna to see what he was referring to when he said, once a chechta, then it has a cheskas heter. What exactly did that mean? So gufa. Omer Ravuna, behema b'chaya becheskat yisurim elev, achi vadalacha b'ma nishketa. Nishketa, becheskat heter omedet, now, he's trying to say something with that. I mean, the thing to have said, I would have thought, is just to say, nishketa, only once it shechted, then it's hutra. If you start talking to me about, then it becomes a cheskas heter, despite the fact that there are attacks against that heter, and we need to now access a cheskas heter in order to stand up against those attacks, what exactly were those attacks? I mean, just say, nishkata hutra. I mean, you can only say a chazaka where there's some type of suffix that makes you doubt its current status, and you need now to access the chazaka of the shechita. So, what does that mean, nishkata hutra? I mean, epechaskasetr. Oh, a kamashbon. Clearly what it's saying is that even though there is an attack, now what is the attack? Afagav ditialik ba reuta. Even though I now have a suffix, and obviously if I have a real suffix about the status before Shechita, it's a little bit ridiculous for me to say that once it's shechted, that defines the status before the Shechita. My question is, but that Shechita, wasn't that Shechita on an animal that was a treifa? I just found out that it might be a treifa. Ah, now here's the fascinating point. Fascinating point is this. The suffix really was nailed after the Shechita. How could that be? You can't become a treifa after Shechita. This is a brilliant idea. The idea is this. We find intestines in the mouth of a wolf. The wolf comes in, cat comes in, let's say, grabs the intestines. We grab the cat. Now we find that there are holes in the intestines just where its teeth are. The problem is that we cannot establish that there were no holes in the intestine. There are holes now. Normally, intestines with holes are bad news. So you're saying, yeah, but I mean, you know where those holes came from. Well, I don't know where those holes came from. I know that there were teeth in those holes, but of course the holes might have been there before the teeth were in the holes. So now I really do have a reisa, but the only reason that I'm looking at the issue as to whether this animal had a punctured intestines was because something happened after the Shechita. That's what, isn't that beautiful? So that's what he's saying. Once it's nishkata, it's now meat. The fact that you've got intestines with holes is completely irrelevant because the chazaka is this is meat, not intestines. So you cannot use this reisa to go backwards and, oh, well, look, I mean, I got to take this seriously. No, you don't. There was a Shechita. You don't have to take that seriously. But obviously, if there's something, some knowledge that you discover now about something that was before the Shechita, it would be a little bit silly to talk about Nishkata Tzbecheskes Heter. That's my question. Maybe it wasn't that, you see? So the Reyesa, this is a very important Nakuda. It's similar to the Nakuda that we had earlier when we talked about the Gezerah on the Kutim. So we said that Rabbi Meir is Chashin Lemiuta. Because he's Chashin Lemiuta, we were geyser on the Kutim, the Miut, because of the Rov. So I asked you there, what is that supposed to mean? If you're worried about a Miut, then you don't need a Gezerah. You're saying, I'm afraid of the Miut. If you're afraid of the Miut, then maybe this Shechita was from a Kuti that worships the Yonah and Hargrizim. You don't need a Gezerah to Aser Ruba Atu Miuta, you see? So what is that extra point? Exactly this issue. It's called, technically speaking, lo machzikinan reyuta. The fact that you don't know something doesn't make it a suffix. It's the fact that there is a datum that then needs to be rejected or accepted that makes a suffix. You thinking, how do I know? What do you mean? Why should you think otherwise? That's the question. I need to make a gezeira to say, you must always consider the possibility that maybe, oh, well, if that's the case, you see. So the issue over here, well, how do I know? Don't I have a suffix whether intestines have a hole in them? No, I don't. No. Why should you think about it? What makes you initially worry about the question of whether? Why would intestines have a hole in them? Certainly you're not born with holes in them. So where would this hole come from? It's only here where now I have a reason to question, gosh, there are holes in them. Comes along the chazaka to say, no. That's not a reyes. If, in fact, it would have been a reyes and it was a mitorer from before, then you got a problem. Then we're going to talk about cases like this that are going to come up that seem to violate these kind of things. And there's very many cases where things could have happened before, could have happened after, that are similar to this. Let's say you find a nail sticking through the lungs or something. Question is how it got there. Needle, pins, and maybe in pressing things they were punctured during the butchering process. All of these questions are going to come up in the Hilchos Trefa. But that's what we're saying over here. There is no reyes. Eitzvei. Ra'at sipor ha-menaker b'te'ina. V'yachbar ha-menaker ba'avatichim. Oh, sorry, I skipped the... we didn't say that inside, sorry. Let's go in there. The case was... the afagavit yalet ba-re'uta. And what is that? Kideboi minei rabav emiravuna. How about if a fox comes along and grabs the intestine? Ma. What do you mean he grabs the intestines? Say, thank you very much, and goodbye. I mean, they're not here. What is the question? You want him to pay? What is the question? No, come on, he made a hole in the Bnei Me'ayim. What's the din? Well, what do you mean he made a hole? So then we see that he made the hole. You're telling me you know for a fact he made the hole. In other words, there were intestines here that were perfectly okay, and you watched a fox make a hole. Again, what's your question? Whether he should pay for making the hole? No, I mean he took them before I could examine them and brought them back with his teeth in them. That's what I'm asking. Natlan v'chziran k'shein nekuvim mahu. Now, mi chashin en sheba b'mokam nekev nakav. Do we have to worry that maybe there really was a hole in the place where there's currently a hole because his teeth are in it? Oh, no, that's my question. Amar le, and he answered him, absolutely not. And that was what Ravuna was coming to say. Once the animal is shechted, things that happen now are happening to a piece of meat. Is that true? Asks the Gemara. Eitvei. How about if you see a bird that is pecking on a date? And how about a fig? I mean, and how about you see an arbar? You see a rat that is being menaker bavatichim. It's gnawing at a melon. You have to be concerned that right there was in fact a puncture made by a poisonous snake that may just have endangered your life if you eat it. Because you never know what type of residual poison may be there. Oh my life, what is your question? Why are you asking me? We're talking about dinim of chazakas and isser, and you're telling me questions that have to do with life-endangering situations, which have nothing to do with halachic considerations, and I don't understand where you're coming from. Mika b'damite surla sakanta. Obviously, but danger is looked at as danger. I mean, why take a chance? Sakana shiny. It's brilliant to tell a guy, well, it has a chazaka kashrus, go right ahead and eat it. Ah! I mean, what answer is that? Amalei Rava, hold on a minute. The way in which you deal to life-endangering situations has to have some reasonable measurement. I mean, what are the chances, for God's sake? So there needs to be a certain element of risk. I mean, well, you're not going to cross the street. You're not going to get into a bathtub. You're not going to eat a melon because there's a hole in the melon. I mean, let's think about this. So, I mean, there are guidelines. Why are you so convinced that those guidelines would be different than the guidelines that you're allowed? Why can't we use that as a model? The Torah doesn't want us to eat Isser. The Torah says, but it's okay if there are bases of the assumption, there's Rov, or there's Chazak, or whatever. Why can't those guidelines serve for the way in which I'm supposed to look at life and analyze whether I should eat this or not and take normal chances of living? So I don't see that it's so different. I mean, a Suffolk Sakana, look, a Suffolk Sakana is a Chumrah, but so is a Suffolk Isser. Suffolk Isser is Nami L'Chumrah. So who's to say that it's a bigger Chumrah? Omele Abayana. You're telling me it's the same thing, lo shiny ben isur la sakanta? There's no difference between an isur and a sakana. Look, I mean, I'm going to show you albeit a special case, but I'm going to show you the type of things that are done with Isser that, if applied to Sakana, would be the height of absurdity. So obviously, we have a different range of options when it comes to dealing with Suffolk Isser than we do with the realities of danger. Let's take a look at the idea of a Suffolk tumor b'shut harabim. Now, we know that the halacha is, if you're in a public area, this has nothing to do with b'shut harabim in terms of Shabbat. It's not defined by mechitzot. It's defined by the number of people that are in the area. We'll see why in a moment. But if you're in a public area, and there's a question as to whether you came in contact with tumah that was in that area, no matter what the chances are, the suffix is tar. Now, let me ask you something. In that same public area, you had a glass of water that had been left uncovered overnight. Are you allowed to drink that? No. Why not say, so just like the suffix tumah b'shut harabim is tahar, the suffix sakana b'shut harabim is kasher? Because that's absurd. Obviously, it's absurd. So the point is that we will do things when it comes to Isser that make no logistical sense whatsoever when it comes to sakana. And that means that we're treating them differently. Philosophic Maya Megulina Surin Omar Lay says, Rava, now how can you bring the Araya from there? That case is inconsistent with the dinim of Suffolk Isser too, isn't it? I mean, you're bringing me, you're saying, albeit it's not a normal situation. Well, but isn't that the point? If we're dealing with something that the Torah says, do not include this in the general set of how to deal with Suffolk. So why would you use this as an indication of, well, we would never do that to Sakana? Well, of course we wouldn't. But we wouldn't do it to another Isser either. So this is not something that you can measure as one of the rules of Suffolk Isser. So scotch that. Over there, it's like makes absolutely no sense from the point of view of Suffolk. It's just that since the whole basis of this halacha is the din of a sota, the din of a sota is very unusual. Guy suspects his wife, warns his wife, she's alone with somebody. So big deal. So she's alone with somebody. Well, I told you not to be alone with somebody. Which is because of that, she becomes asura. So the Torah says that she's asura, but if there are three people present, she, ostensible lover, and some other guy, then she's not in hysteret. So three people, she's tahar, and the Torah uses the word tahar, meaning that's part of the din of tahira and tuma vis-a-vis her husband. So the Torah is saying, using that word, we learn it out, halacha mashmi sinai, sota, that it has to be, and that's why, of course, we define Rishut HaYachid in terms of a private setting, which is nistera, and Rishut HaRabim is a public setting, which is lo nistera, which is purely a function of the people that are present. So just like a sota Rishut HaYachid is asura, so too tuma Rishut HaYachid is asura. What does that have to do with this? Motiv Rav Shimi. Well, I'll give you another example. The halacha is that if there's a dead sheretz, one of the shmona shrotzim that is metame, that is in the mouth of a weasel, let's say. The weasel is walking on kikrot shel truma, pitter-patter of little weaselly feet. And the question is, suffik naga, suffik lo naga. Now, we don't know whether it touched, did it bend its little weaselly head to become a metame of these kikarot? Whatever. It's not clear what a chulda is. Chulda, today we use it for rats. It's the kechulda darabi kre batim, because then many people say it's a weasel. But some say even it's a cat. At the time of the Gemara, they called it a chulda. But whatever it is, it's a suffix whether it came in contact with the actual kikrot of truma or not. The halacha is sveiko tahor, and that's even in Rishut HaYachid. So don't give me the business about that's we learned it out from sota. But I mean, in the same situation, if you would have a suffix of mayim migulin, they would be also. So there you see that we treat sveiko differently. No, but this is blah blah blah. That's part of the same set of sota, you know. I mean, because, look, we've tried many times asking those weasels or asking those pieces of bread, did you touch? And they always are silent. Masha'inkin, when we ask the sota, did you touch? And she said, no, I'm Shomer Negiah, of course. So then, then you get an answer. And that is part of the Hilchot HaGemira law, Misota. Just like a Sota, Davar Sheyesh Ba Da'at Lishael. We ask her, I mean, she's supposed to take an oath about this. And she's putting her words up here to test. But if she can't talk and she can't respond, then the whole thing is ridiculous. We don't know what's going on. We don't stop and take a person without a responsibility to be responsible. The same thing is true over here. So there is no din of tumah whatsoever unless the tumah is similar to the sota that can be asked. And then you start worrying about whether it's just right or just right. But it can't even be asked. There's no din of suffix tumah. And that too is a chiddush. So stop bringing me riyas from the one set of things that's outside the halachas of suffix. Omer Ravashi, okay. I'd like to bring a case that I suggest is very, very relevant to the issue at hand, in which we'll contrast a container of water. Let's get as close as possible, a controlled situation. Container of water vis-a-vis drinking it, and a container of water vis-a-vis its status for using, let's say, for the paraduma. So, here we have a tsluchit. Okay, now this tsluchit has been filled with water from a living source, mayim chayim, and we want to put the ephrapora in it, and so on. We haven't yet. Right now, just a cup of water. And I left it uncovered. I walk back into the room, and I find it covered. Mechuseh. They don't usually cover themselves, and therefore I say we'll have to be machmer and call it mea, and I certainly can't use it to be mekadesh demayim for the par. Why? Because since it didn't happen on its own, ani omer adam tamei nichmas l'sham v'kisa. I mean, I don't know who came in there, so I have a suffix and a reshut hayachid. I'll have to assume that it's Tameh, and I'll have to assume that it's Tameh Legabe all dinim, not only Legabe, the din of the par. Now, how about if I left it uncovered? I left it covered, I mean, Nich Mechusa, and I came and I found it uncovered. So now, Im Yichola Chulda Lishtot Bimana, the problem with Chuldot is, meaning, when I say Im Yichola, in other words, it's in a place that's accessible. Is it in every place accessible? No. I might have been smart enough, as was very much the common practice in those days, in order to actually protect. We're not used to the whole problem of shratzim, because we live in pretty much sheretz-free areas because of our extent of our control of shratzim with artificial means. But when you live with shratzim, you have to take all types of precautions against shratzim. So you leave things, let's say your table, the legs of your table are in little cups of water to prevent things from crawling up to the table, and things like that. Most things that are left open in the house will be left hanging from the ceiling in a little, which you see sometimes in old pictures, in like a little reshet, in a screened container, and you put it there. So you're not going to get the family cat, he's not going to be able to get there. And shratzim are going to have a difficult time getting it. It's the middle of the year. So it's hanging in midair. So chulda can't possibly reach it. So then, it depends. So if a chulda can reach it, and if he would reach it, you're saying, what's wrong with the chulda? Nothing. Nothing in terms of tumah, obviously. As a matter of fact, nothing's ever wrong with anything alive when it comes to tumah. But there is something wrong when it comes to drinking from the water that is going to be used for the paraduma. And that is, there's three issues that are involved over here. Number one is whether the water is regurgitated back into, or sucked up and then released. Now, there are some animals that suck. If they suck, the moment they release pressure, the water will go back down into the water that was there. The problem with that is that it is no longer Mayim Chayim El Keli. It's been in a different container, so to speak. That's one problem. The other problem is it's water that has been used for another purpose. Anytime you do malacha with the water, it becomes nifsal for the paraduma. The other problem is that these things may also drip saliva and get other things in it, and then you don't have mayim chayim. You have other ingredients here. So if, and this is a chulda specifically, that sucks and releases, or a nachash, according to Rabbi Gamliel, he says a nachash does the same thing, that it also releases the liquid that it was sucking on. Or, for that matter, Moshe Yireid Batal Balayla, if it's in a location where there's condensate that gets into it at night, so now it's mixed with other water. In all of these cases, it becomes possible because it's not considered to be Mayim Chayim. We don't have a Suffolk Tumah over here, obviously, because what would have been the Tamiyat? Now, comes along Rabbi Shurban Levi and explains, Ma Tam, why is it that we're not Cheshish for Tumah? Why aren't we Cheshish that maybe, we said before, if you find it covered, then you got a problem. Maybe somebody Tamei came in. But if you find it uncovered, you don't have a problem. Why? Because Darkan Shal Shratzim Legalot Ve'in Darkan Lechasot. Usually cats don't cover the milk. They uncover the milk. So therefore, what you have over here is, you've got, could have been a human, it could have been a cat. If it was a human, it could have been a tahor human. So let's put the chances together. 50% of the human, and 25% of that is tahor anyway. 50% of the cat, total of 75% tahor. Okay, so you got most of the chances of tahor, no problem. But since cats don't usually cover, we keep the cats out of the equation. And now you've got a problem of only about a human. Maybe it's tummy, maybe it's taurus. There you got a problem. That's the explanation. Now, when it would come to suffic mayim megulim, but when it would come to drinking exactly the same thing, it would be asur. And it would be asur in any of all, of any circumstance. Because, I mean, over there, even if you didn't find it covered or uncovered or anything, you just simply left it there. You're asur mayim megulim. Why are you asuring mayim megulim? Must be because chamira sakanta miyisura. Shmamina chamira sakanta miyisura shmamina. It's a given. We have all of the issues we would never even dream about for a moment. You know, analyzing, so what are the chances it's a poisonous snake? Even if it is a snake, what percentage of snakes are poisoned? Maybe it was a person. None of that is nogea. We have no idea that anything happened. There's nothing that's ma'or a chashash. And nonetheless, we're going to be machmer. So clearly we're more machmer on sakkada than iser. Tanan hatam, indeed, the rule is, the Mishnah, shlosha mashkin asurim mishum giloy, there are three things that we need to worry about. Attracting the shratzim that may leave a residue of poison in it, and that is water, wine, and milk. V'kama yishuv yil asurin, how long would they have to be left uncovered and unobserved for it to become asur? K'dei she'yetzei harechesh mimakom karov v'yishteh, the amount of time that it takes for something poisonous to come out of something close by and drink. I wouldn't say close by. How much is close by? Kama makom karov. Well, remember, floors were made out of dirt. So Amar of Yitzchak Bereder of Yehuda Kadeshi Yitzchak Mitachat Ozen Akli. Look, I mean, it may be directly under the handle in the ground and pop up, scurry up the handle, take a quick drink. Yeah, take a quick drink. And then you say, Yishteh, okay, why don't I see it? You said the amount of time it takes to take a quick drink. So then I should be watching it as it's completing its drink and making its way back to its hole. But nothing is there. Now, how do you explain the fact that nothing is there? Okay, I meant to take a quick drink and get back to the hole, okay? So the shir is Yishteh v'yachzor lechoro. That depends on where you are, how tall the kli is, what is the makom karov, where's the first place in the floor that something can come out of. It's a tough life, but I'll tell you, ever since I used to stay in Tveri as a boy up on the mountain, the first time that I put my hand in the drawer to take out a sitter and there was a scorpion on it, I have never not looked or left something open. My God. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, God. Oh, God. was right here.
I remember Yud Kippalei's wife. She put on her robe in the morning. Remember Yud Kippalei? She put on her robe, put her hand in her robe, and got a scorpion sting. They had to rush her to the hospital. All she just put on her robe. Oh, man. Yeah.
That's unusual.
No, no, that's scorpions. That's what I'm talking about. That is what I thought you know. Scorpions are all over. Terrifying to go to the bathroom. That's better than scorpions.
When your mother was a baby, she was taking a bath. It was just old enough to be sitting in the bathtub alone. And I walk in, and right there is like a little hole under the bath where you could get to the water. There's this enormous scorpion right on the floor in front of where she's taking a bath. Naftali, it was your father that came in and took care of that scorpion. I was too scared. This was here in Kiryat Sanz. Nothing was built in that area. Here in Kiryat Sanz in Yerushalayim. It was right after the war. It was in 68. And it was like completely, you know, unsettled area. There we were, right at the edge of the Yishuv, right there in the bathroom. Go, take three. I hope I can keep a straight face. I can't.
What a chutzpah.
My God. It's one. Hashochet b'sakin shel avdei kochavim. Rav Amar Kolef, V'Rabba Barachana Omer Mediach. How about if you did go ahead and use a trefa knife? So you took a guy's knife. Now it's got all kinds of oily substances on it from nevela and other things. What is the din of the meat that you cut? In other words, around the Beit HaShechita, there was going to be a deposit of these oily substances. So what do you got to do? Rav Amar Kolef, Rav says, look, you're going to have to actually cut off a thin slice from the Beit HaShechita because some of that oily substance has gotten into the meat around the area that you touched, and you'll have to cut off a piece on either side. The other man, the Amar says, Umar Amar, Mediach. So Rav Amar Kolef, Rabba Bar Brachana Amar Mediach. It's enough to wipe it off. So Lema Baka Miflegate, wash it off. Lema Baka Miflegate, Mar Savar Beit HaShechitat Sonen, is it possible that the Machloket is, if we do it in the respective order, then we should change, as the Bach does, the order of things here to say, Mar Savar Beit HaShechitat Roteach, Ravu says that you have to actually cut off a thin slice of meat. He holds that the area is considered to be hot and therefore absorbing. Umar Savar, Beit HaShechitat Sonen. Whereas the other man, the Amar, holds, treat it the way you would anything cold. Anything cold, it doesn't absorb. And therefore, you can simply wash it off, as we know from our kitchen, when it comes to issues of kashrus. No. Somebody hashochet. He went ahead and did this. Says the Gemara, look. That does not necessarily have to be the issue. It may well be that Kuli Alma Beit HaShechita is roteach in terms of other questions which will be raised later. The reason that they argue is a different question over here. Mandi Amar Kolef, the one who says that you need to cut, fine, that follows. If it's roteach, it means that there was absorption. So Shapir, that works. But why would someone who holds that the Beit HaShechita is considered to be warm, why does he say in this case it's enough to simply wash it off? And that's because Aide de Tride Simanim Lafukidam Lo Bali. When you have the bleeding that is occurring under pressure at the instant of Shechita, which is where it came to contact with the knife, the external
pressure. The osmotic pressure going out prevents absorption at that point. And therefore, though normally there would have been absorption, in this case, we're too involved in the bleeding to absorb. And therefore, it's enough to wipe it off. Ikari amre. Now, others learn. The other approach would be to say that everybody agrees Beit HaShechita is Tzoni, and that, therefore, the natural assumption would have been is that it's enough to wash it off. So, man diomer mediach, if you hold, you just need to wash it off, that follows. Naturally, why would anybody say on a cool piece of meat, relatively speaking, that you would still need to cut out a piece? Ah, that's because there are two elements that have to do with absorption. Actually, three, as we'll see. One issue is the temperature. The other issue is the pressure, of course. When you are cutting, you're putting on thousands of pounds per square centimeter here by the cut. You have a very, very tiny surface that's pressing against the Beit HaShechita, which is, of course, the only way that it manages to separate the molecules. But that pressure is immense. And therefore, whatever is in that knife is going to be pressured into the Beit HaShechita, into the meat, so that even though it may not have the right temperature for absorption, but under pressure, it will absorb. And agav duchka de sakina, because of the pressure of the knife, voila, it's going to end up absorbing.
Pressure creates heat? Or
is it no, it's nothing to do with heat. Sure, it's a completely different factor. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's exactly the same thing as your soda bottle. Your soda bottle will be cold. The pressure is high, and therefore the moment you open it up and you let the pressure out, you're gonna let the gas out. But on the other hand, yeah, you're pushing it into the meat. It's always we use pressure for a lot of food things that we'll make instead of heat. As a matter of fact, one of the ways of cooking is using a pressure cooker. Is not only for the addition. One of the main purposes of pressure cooker is to get it hotter. I'm saying the main purpose is to allow the water normally won't go above 100 degrees centigrade. It just turns into steam. Pressure cooker allows it to be hotter. But the fact is that it also cooks better because the things that are in the pressure, when you put in your tavlinim and so on, many people like the pressure cooker, not because of the additional heat. It used to be very popular, but because of the way that the taste is pushed into the absorbed differently. So over here we need to worry about the way in which the knife presses against the Beit HaShechita. Therefore, it isn't necessarily nogea one way or the other, the issue of whether Beit HaShechita is chanin or roteach. We have two approaches here. Either both might agree it's roteach, both might agree it's sonein, and we've got different issues that need to be taken into consideration. In total, as we're going to see, we need to take into consideration the vicosity, which is going to come up soon. In other words, are we dealing with something that is oily, in which case it's much easier for it to work its way into another material.
The residue on the knife.
The residue on the knife. We're going to be dealing with the heat. We're going to be dealing with the pressure. And, as we just did, we're going to be dealing with the osmotic pressure as well. In other words, what's happening in addition to the cutting at the same time. And that's the torit. Agav de treated to be bleeding. We're not going to be looking at absorbing. Okay, that's our halachic principle, really, rather. Good. So far we've addressed three of these things. We're going to end up addressing all four. How about the other way around? How about a sakin that was used to cut an animal that was treif? The sakin itself was kosher. What's the din of a sakin that was used on a treifa? So does that sakin, in order for me to use it again on a kosher animal... We just saw, you certainly can't use a non-kosher knife like hatchila, even if there's what to do, washing off the Beit HaShechita or whatever. But that's always b'diavad, as it always is with non-kosher kalim. We don't use a lechatchila, and then we take care of an issue that was raised later. So what would be in this case, if I want to reuse that knife? Pligi baravach v'ravina, chadam rabachamin, v'chadam rabatzonin. One man the armor says, oh, look, you're going to have to be magil the knife. You have to put it through boiling hot water the way you would any kind of trefa knife. A live animal. I mean, it's not live anymore after you cut its neck, but it was live once upon a time. Let's see. We can turn to Ayla Trefas. We've got 70 possibilities. Which one would you like? It can't become treif after it was killed. It can only become treif before it's killed. If you shoot it through the lungs after shechting it, it still remains kosher. As a matter of fact, even if you shoot it through the brain after you killed it, it's kosher. So it can only be treif before you shecht it, right? You want to go through all of the treifas. Okay. That would be enough? That would be enough. Hole in the lungs? I'm sorry? Who said you knew before you shechted it? Why can't you find out afterwards? Why are you creating problems? And if you're aliens and you have an x-ray, why can't you use the x-ray? If you need to know, not that I believe there's a need to know, but let's say you're the kind of person that's a control freak. You bring along an x-ray machine, MRI, put it through everything, and then you can find out if it's a treifa. Why were you interested? I'm just curious. That's right, we only knew it was treif after we killed it. Now my knife is treif. What do I do? No, a knife is always treif. I just found out about it. My goodness, a boy who grew up in a schlachter should ask us questions. This came up every day. The stomach's a bookie in all of the treifas, I would imagine. Assuming they looked. You think maybe that's why you're so focused on knowing. Okay, so one man, the armor says, what do we do with this knife? You're kosher a knife the way you would kosher anything else. Put it into a boiling pot of water. No, we would not. Hagola. So one man, the armor says, you need heat. One man, the armor says, what do you need heat for? Use cold water. The halach is you don't need hot water. And not only that, you don't need water. If you have a little piece of old cloth that's rough, to note the word michpre is for the word kapara, which is to clean off, as Rashi brings here as well. Kippurei Zahav, he loves that, always brings that. Kippurei Zahav is because it's used to clean your finger. So lamichpre over here means to be mechaper, and that's to clean off the knife. You don't need water at all. Lo tzarech. Ulaman di amar bechamin. Let's say you're saying that you need to have hot water. You have to put it through boiling water. Why is that? I mean, I guess because at the time, he's saying that every shechita is basically heated. So memela, whatever it absorbs, needs to use hot water. But the problem is that every shechita is also not kosher. Because before the animal is shechted, it's Eiver Min HaChai. So you cut Eiver Min HaChai, boiling hot. You're saying, I mean, the best shechita you're saying is boiling hot. So why every single time you do an act of shechita, you should have to kasher the knife?
Why is it Eiver Min HaChai?
Because it's alive. Yeah. So live things are treif, because they're Eiver Min HaChai. Every standing animal to take a bite out of is treif. And this sakin took a bite out of it. So every sakin is treif. So every shkita is treif. So what exactly do you suggest? Stop the press, be machsher the knife, and then make a treif again. Well, I don't understand what you're talking about. So shkita is by definition treif. I don't know what you're asking. I mean, so then the same thing was true. Is hetera, nami bola. I mean, when you're dealing with a shechita of a perfectly kosher animal, the knife is always treif. It was bolea ever min achai. Yes, but when was it bolea? Only after it got hot. But by what point did it get hot? By the point at which you finished shechita already. So, emat bala lachi chayma. Emat ka chayma. Lachi gamra shechita. Nu, ahi shaita hetera. The moment that the shechita is over, so is the Yitzhar of Eivra Menachai over. So you don't really have to worry about this issue.
Are you really saying that? I mean...
That was the recording from the 12th cycle, today's Daf Yomi. Here is the recording of the previous cycle, cycle number 11 of the equivalent Daf. Quite a different ambience, quite a different attendance. You may like to review the Daf with it, or perhaps use it as your actual initial learning. Enjoy. Okay, we're holding on that chesam and Aleph Maseches Chulin, and we're on the second line. V'yomer Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Yesterday we talked about the various things that are part of the norm of the materials that a tabach has: three sakinim and two containers of water that are marked separately for chelev and for basa. We also have a similar maimer of Rav Yehuda Amar Rav regarding the intellectual tools of or physical tools also, in a sense, at least the professional tools of a Talmud Chacham. That a Talmud Chacham tzarich shi'lmud shlosha dvarim. There's three things a Talmud Chacham has to know: ktav, shchita, umila. Now, the shchita umila is pretty simple what that is, that he has to, even though he knows the halachas, he has to actually get practice to be able to do the job when necessary. Ktav, there's a lot of discussion exactly what ktav means. Rashi learns Ktav means to sign his name, which is a little strange. Because, I mean, what's the, first of all, Simon is also good if it's a unique Simon to sign a name. And besides, we'll see later on the Gemara is Mechalik about things that anyway everybody knows. We're not going to list that in terms of what a Talmud Chacham knows. Some learns Ktav is in terms of Ktav of the Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzah, to be able to be Mesakin. Others learn Ksav, very interesting chat, is that he should know how to write a tshuva with the right kind of signon. He has to have a signon, he has to be able to write a little poetry, to be able to pass in the world of letters. That's Tanya Ktav. Rav Chananya Bar Shalmi, and Mishmei the Ravana, Ab Kesher Shel Tefillin. He has to know how to make a Kesher Shel Tefillin. He has to know how to say the Birkas Chatani at the Chuppah. And he has to be able also to make tzitzit. How come the other Madiyomer, Yudam and Rab, didn't list these three? Because Hani Shechicha, those things are very matsui, and a person learns them anyway. But the other things are not so matsui. There's a Rabbeinu Gershom who brings another meaning. Hani Shechicha, and there's always people around that can handle that for you. But not necessarily the things that you might have to do for yourself. You're referring in the opposite direction. Why bother writing about Shchita? Omer Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kol Tabak She'in Yodea Hilchot Shchita, Asur Lechol Mishchitato. Now finally we get here directly to what do we mean by Hachol Shochtim. So we saw before, we talked about Mumchim, where somebody knows the halachas, but he doesn't necessarily have practiced in front of us, we're not sure. We've had a question of whether we're muhzakim, if you're mumchen, or muhzakim without mumchen, mumchen without muhzakim. And here, indeed, we say that if he be'etzem doesn't know, there's no question that he's not kosher. Remember that before we spoke about, when we say muhzakim then a mumchen, it doesn't mean that we know he's then a mumchen. It means that we don't know that, we don't see him pass a test. But we're assuming that he's going, but if we know for a fact he doesn't know the halachas, nobody said over there he was kosher, and that, as Tosis pointed out, is based on this halacha that we now got to. And Shmuel here is quoted as saying that a tabach she'inu yodeh kashrita, if you know for a fact that he doesn't know yodeh kashrita, then asur lachom mishritato, you can't eat from mishrita. Now, there's a little bit of a question as to what this means. Rashi, the Mashmaut of Rashi, he says over here that he may not realize that he did something wrong, which implies that, okay, so if ex post facto, the guy shechted, and now you say to him, look, you don't really know the halachas, let's review the halachas with you, tell us whether maybe you made a mistake in any of these things. So then it would be kosher, because Rashi says, v'lo yada means, eino yodea she'asur lasor kin umar chilala, and he'll give it to us. What was the point of my chilala? But if he knows, so then, Neino Machilalan, Mashma, many are Medaic from this Rashi, not 100%, but many are Medaic from this Rashi, the Mashma, that ex post facto you could tell him. Which is something that we find in general in the Gabe Hilchos Kashrus. One of the most famous
famous issues that are similar to this, and they compare it in the Chubas to this Gemara, is the question of whether a woman will remember how much of a kli she inserted, so she used a milchika knife, a milchika spoon to stir her flesh kesuv. So over there, the din is that it depends how much of the spoon, at least that's how we parse, how much of the spoon was in the pot. Will she remember how much of the spoon she went to the pot? Let's say she wasn't the pekiya and the din that it makes an afkamina. So that's similar to this Rashi. The guy didn't know that it would make an afkamina. Ex post facto, you tell him it would make an afkamina, will rely on whether he remembers. But many of the other Birushalmis are not like this. But the idea is that something, the klal we saw in the Gemara, is milsa de la ramila ya inche of the vilavadaita. A person can do something that he has no idea has significance and then not remember that he did it because it did not have significance to him at the time. So you can't ask somebody who never had any idea that this makes a difference, you can't ask him, did you do it? Because it never registered. Therefore, it wouldn't help to tell him afterwards, he'd have to know in advance. There's a famous tshuva that every woman is sensitive to anything that goes on in the kashrus in the house, which is not a big deal in this particular thing. She knows that she better remain aware because there's always shy what's coming up. So there, even if you thought not like Rashi over here, she definitely, that you could ask her how much of the spoon was inside. In any of that, most learned that the issue over here is Nusil Ramila Inche Lavadaite, and therefore it wouldn't help even afterwards to tell her. Now, here we finally get to the main statement, the Elu Hein Hilka Shvita. After going through seven daf of Gemara of what the din is, who can check us on, we still don't know what Shvita is. And these are our locus of Moshe Mishinai that define what Shvita is. And they are, we saw already three before. They are Shihia, Drosa, Chaloda, Hagroma, V'ikur. So Shehiyah we discussed. Shehiyah means that he stopped in the middle of the act of Shmita, which turns what he did, since he hadn't completed it, turned what he did into an act of Tarfus, not into an act of Shmita. Drosa is where the relationship of pressure to the lateral movement of the knife is wrong, and there's too much pressure. So that's called Dores. Kalada is where the knife is hidden, say, between the simonim. We'll see how far we're willing to extend Chalada, that it even includes things that are not part of the etzem shvita that cover the knife. Hagrama is where we have the knife going out of the area on the simonim that is kosher l'shvita. In the Gemara, the Mishnah defines that later on. What part of the neck is kosher l'shvita? And finally, ikur. The ikur would mean that the simen itself is detached from the place at which it's mechubar. Listen, the truth is there's something of a machlokas as to what ikur exactly is. Right? Where is it based on? Because the Gemara says, Maika Mashma. What's the chiddush in Shmuel's Maimer? Kulu Taninu. Every one of those cases is a Mishnah somewhere in the upcoming parak of Hashoket, which tells us all of the dinim of Shchita. So why do we need Shmuel to tell me now the five dinim of Shchita? So now the question is, where exactly does it say ikur? Rashi says the place where it says ikur is in the Mishnah of Shochat HaVeshet UPasak HaGageret. This is a case where the Shochet checks the esophagus, but he's posek the Gageret. And now Tosis says, what does that have to do with Zilcha Shechita? There it wasn't checked. If you do a psika, you rip out the simen. What does that have to do with Shechita? That's not a pagam in Shechita, it's just you never shecht it. I mean, we certainly don't need to know that if you never shecht it something, that it's considered to be an avela if it dies. So how would that be included in the five psulim of Shechita? So Tosa says that it's more reasonable to say, perhaps, that ikur would mean where you rip at the simonim, not that you rip out the simonim. So let's say you use a knife with a pegima in it. So even though you're cutting, that's not called cutting. That's called ikur. Indeed, Rashi doesn't say anything about a knife that has a pegima over here. Right? So that's like an act of chanika rather than an act of shvitana. Therefore, it's a psul in shvita. And the Mishnah then would mean, what Mishnah was this listed in? Because it says later on, bako shoftim, Chutz mimagal kotzer. So you're not allowed to use something that has little pegimot in it. Okay, so that would be the taninu, according to Rashi. Now the Bahag learns, and this is a completely different element, that what the pegam of the ikur is that you did shechita on a simen that was not properly connected to the place where it's usually connected. You did the act of shechita. To which Tosfos objects that then it's not a pegam in the shechita, really. I mean, what you're saying is that this is something that is not royal shechita, so it would be like a trefa, you know, it would be like shechita's trefa. So, I mean, Tosfos says, okay, maybe he's learning it's a special law for Meshtina. The only psula over here is done in terms of tarfas, only if it happens this way that you shech to that. But anyway, those are the three basic approaches. Obviously, we'll see more of this later on. Here we're only bringing in an agav, what the bafina has to be, of a tabak, to know that he's considered to be a mumra. Well, so kamashmalan. So anyway, so what do we need all of these five things for that Shmuel is telling us if they're all beferish and mishtayas later on? Kula tanino. I mean, the Kiddush that he's telling us is Lo tzricha shachata paninu shleim shtayim shosh pa'amim. We know this guy passed a test in the physical, properly done shechita, and he passed it two or three times. There's no problem. But we know he doesn't know the halachos. He was shachat shapir. So he is a muchzakir, but he's not a mumcha. Not a mumcha in the sense we had before, namely that we don't know he's a mumcha. We know he's not a mumcha. So therefore, Ma'od the Tema Midiach Shachat Shapir. Kiddush that Shmuel is coming to tell me, because I might have thought that since, look, bottom line is the guy knows how to do it properly, so we could always assume that he does it the same way, right? So Hainami Shachat Shapir, we should rely on that. Gamashulan Kiva de Lo Gamar, since he doesn't know the halachas. Zin and Deshaiva Doris, if something happens to him, Veloyada, he won't realize that there's a problem, and he'll simply present it to the market as if it's kosher. Mamela, we have to make sure that he knows the halachas. As I mentioned, there's a machlokas over here whether that can be done ex post facto. Say, did you? The Amar Rav Yonah Mishmuel, another Maimer Rav Yonah Mishmuel in terms of the tabak. Hatabak tzarich shivdok besimanim liachar shechita. He must check the simanim after shechita to make sure that they were cut properly to the proper extent. Otherwise, we've got a problem. Now, exactly what the problem is, not 100% clear. But look, what would happen if you didn't check the simonim? But this is, would check the simonim. So would this be an issur d'oraisa to eat it? In other words, if you hold that the chazaka, that the behemah is not zavuach before, and therefore you're coming now to take it out of that chazaka, you can't take it out of that chazaka based on the fact that regularly you shech normally, because perhaps the regularly is not enough to change that which we know. Others learn the issue over here is the question of smoke miyut ala chazak. In other words, there'll be miyut times at which the shechita wasn't done properly to cut through rov of the simen. And since we have a cheskes iser, so there really is a basis in the d'oraisa to have to be koshish. And therefore, if you didn't check the simon to know that it was shechted properly, you're in trouble because of the miyut times that it's not shechted. In any event, this is an interesting chiddush of Shmuel, which Rav Yosef says. It's not really a chiddush of Shmuel, but Rav Yosef, I think this is a Tefeir Shem Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Later on, we talk about what is the shiur of Shehiyah. Oh, we said over here, Shehiyah, there's a certain amount of time in which you stop moving the knife. Then the shechita becomes a trefus, because you didn't complete the shiur. But what is that shiur? I mean, what if it's just momentary? So Rabbi Shimon says the shiur is that you stopped moving a knife long enough to check. Now, what do you mean to check, my love, today because simonim? In other words, there's some standard that's called to check. That must mean that there is, in fact, a chiyuv to check. So what are you going to check? You're going to check the simonim. Oh, my Rabbi, now, Achim Rabbi Yochanan, today bikur chacham, what he's talking about over there, is yes, there is, in fact, as we'll see later on at Takona, that a chacham has to check the knife before the tabak can do the shechita. As you know, before you start the day, Chacham comes in, looks at the knives, mat to the knives, and then they start shechting. So that's the norm of Kedei Bikur. Says the Gemara, how can that be? In Kenatata Dvarech L'Shiurim, how can a shiur be the amount of time it takes a Kochum to check? And I asked him, you mean like from the time he leaves from Harnof, or from the time he knocks on the door? I mean, it doesn't depend how far away he is. What kind of shiur is that? No, we mean the shiur of the Bedika per se, Kidei Bikur Tabak, Chacham. Well, the Chacham is the Tabak. In other words, he's standing by the knife now. Now he's about to start shechting. He checks the knife. The time that it takes to check the standard knife, Tosfos points out, obviously, a knife can be any size. And again, it's not that of a rapid shiur, but a standard knife means a halachic standard knife, which is a shiur of kedei tzavar, plus an additional kedei tzavar outside of it, which we'll see is necessary in order to have the proper lateral movement of the knife. So that shiur is the shiur of kedei biko, but the Mishnah does not imply that there's a fee of a biko simani, and that's Shmuel's chiddush.
The birds or
behemoths? Lo badak man. How about if you didn't do the bedika? So Rabbi Elazar ben Antigna is Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Yana Yama Treifa V'yasur Bachila. As we said, that this, again, if really there's an issue of smoke miyata l'chazaka, even if the chazaka would be stronger to neged, the fact that I say most of the time I would check properly, so then we're dealing with a d'oraisa here. But what is the d'oraisa? So Rabbi Elazar Rabbiani says, well, the din would be that the animal is treif, and you can't eat it, but it's not an avela. It will not be metame. Whereas in a braisa it says, the masnisa tana, it is an avela. Thank you very much. Umetame v'masa. Actually, it will be metame the way an avela would be metame. The vika mifuge, what are they arguing in? They're arguing in how to understand, how far to take Ravuna's famous psak. Ravuna's psak was like this, the Yoma. Behema b'chayeha b'cheskat isur omedet, ad sheyivada lecha b'ma nishchuta. Now, the implications of this psak are going to take us some time to see throughout the sugyas over here, but we don't necessarily need to understand all the implications yet. We just want one particular issue. There is a chazaka over here that an animal, as long as it's alive, is osur. Now, Rashi learns the Isser that we're talking about over here is the Isser of Abram and Achai. That's a little bit of a problem, since a dead animal, which is in front of us, is clearly not Abram and Achai. And this gets into the question of Masakina mi Isser li Isser. Can you use a chazaka that defines one state of Isser, which is clearly no longer relevant? Can you use it to define the halakha in terms of a leap to another basis for the Isser? Now, Tosfos does this in Beis, and we'll say elements of it here and later, holds that the Isser that we're talking about over here is the Isser of Eina Zvucha. In other words, since the Torah says, V'zavachta kasher tzivitecha, or V'zavachta v'achalta, so then it means you can only eat what is Zavuach. So long as the animal is alive, beside the Isser of Abram and Achai, there's also the fact that it wasn't shechted. And not being shechted means you're in a state of Isser, just because of the non-shechita. That state continues, says Tosfos, until we can prove that it changed. So, achi vadalacha b'ma nishchita, you cannot take off that Isser of Achiva. Nishchita, once we know that the shechita took place, harei b'cheskat heter, achi vadalacha b'ma nishchita. We'll see what that's supposed to tell us. But unless you have a basis to show us, to prove to us that it was Nitrifa before, we're always going to be doche anything that you find now to a problem that occurred post-Shechita, and therefore not affect the Behema. In any event, the machlokis in understanding Rav Huna is basically how to take the Cheskas Isser and apply it to our case. Because Marsover b'Cheskas Isser Kaima, Bahashta Mesa. So one man the Omar says, look, if it's a cheskas yisur, that it's not zavuach, right now, what is its status? A dead, non-zavuach animal. Tell me what the halach is of a dead, non-zavuach animal. Last I heard, it's called an avela. By definition. And it's metame v'mase, correct? So if Ravuna is telling you that you have to assume that this is a dead, non-shochet behemah, then he's telling you that it's tamei. Well, the other man, the Omar says, Umar saw, but no. A chazaka doesn't tell you how to look at a changed circumstance. As Chazaka simply tells you how to maintain a halakhically defined state. What was the state of this animal up until this moment?
It was awesome. Was it tame?
No, of course it wasn't tame. It was alive. How could it be tame?
So the state of Isser, the Chazaka maintains. But the Chazaka doesn't tell you, okay, but if it wasn't Zavuach and it's dead and it's an Avela, the Chazaka doesn't tell you it wasn't Zavuach. The Chazaka tells you only that you have to act with the same dinim that an Eina Zavuach was at that time, which is namely that it's Aser Bachila. A Chazaka is a completely abstract concept. It has no relationship to reality. The fact that it's Eina Zavuach doesn't mean that now it's dead in terms of the Chazaka. That remains a suffix. There, whatever dinim you would apply to the suffix, you would apply.
So
the Chazaka is only from the abstract din. The abstract din is, it's not Zavuach and Aser Bachila, period. Not, it's not Zavuach. Ah, that's a reality. And now it's dead. That's an undeniable reality. And therefore it's an Avela. No, that doesn't follow. So Mimele, we have over here a very fundamental question about how to relate to Chazakas. And that's the Machlokas in Rabuna.
Physically to change it from the
Chazaka that was? Yeah, we do. That's, everybody agrees with that. Gufa. Omer Rabuna behema b'chaya b'cheskas Yisra medes ad shi yivada lacha b'ma nishchata nishchata b'cheskas hetero medes ad shi yivada lacha b'ma nishchata. That's an awfully long-winded way to say nishchata lutra. I mean, you must be trying to tell us something. You're not making it very clear what you're trying to say. You're saying, once it checked it, then it is becheskas heter. I mean, just say, once it checked it, it's mutter. Thank you. When we say becheskas heter until you know what happened, and you're saying that something happened, and now the fact that it had already been defined as heter at one moment makes us decide that it is heter in the future, which is a very strange thing to say. Because if lemaisa, there is a problem that has arisen now, that is going to make it a treifa, it could only be a problem that existed prior to the Shechita. So then by definition, the fact that the Shechita was martyred at the time, that was just that we didn't know. But how could the fact that we did a Shechita now tell us back in time that it wasn't a treifa before? So what exactly would you be referring to? You're telling me, even though there's something over here that makes us think that perhaps something could have happened before the Shechita, I'm going to assume that it happened after the Shechita. So we've got to be talking about the type of suffix which could have occurred later. What would be that case? Well, it was famous Abaya that Rav Abba asked Rav Huna, and he asked him like this, what happens if after the Shechita, an animal, a fox comes into the Beis HaShechita and runs off with the entrails? And they haven't been checked. So, what do you mean, nata? If he took them, I'll listen, they're not here. I mean, what kind of question is that? Why should I think anything was wrong with the intestines? I mean, I don't understand. I don't have to check every possible trace. So it went off, so I hope it enjoyed the meal. I mean, what kind of question is this? I mean... A fox comes in and makes a hole in the entrails. Maho. Makes a hole. Fine, so then I know it made a hole. But the animal's dead. What if I heard once the animal was shechted? It doesn't matter if you make a hole in the entrails, or else how do you eat it? So, and Nikav in Aymel Mountain. Nikav. So then we see him made the hole. Why, stop being so obtuse. Come on, you know what I mean. Not when he took the B'nai Me'ayim. We didn't see them before. And now he brings them back to us with holes in them, which I would assume, since he was nibbling on them. So Yegzirim Kishayim Nikuvim. The problem is that now I can't say that there are no holes. And there are holes. I have what to be told of those holes, namely the fact that they were being dragged around by a fox. So now, Micha Shin and Shema B'mokum Nekev Nikev Olo. But since I can no longer say that there's nothing that's ma'orah me to a problem in these intestines. Something's definitely ma'orah me. I mean, it's ripped to shreds over here. So perhaps there was a hole there before. I mean, now I can't establish anything. Amarle ein choshishin sheba b'makom nekem nike. Now the point is, and that indeed would be the meaning of Rav Huna's phrasing, once it's shechted, we're not going to now come along with an event that takes place afterwards to say, well, you never know, it could have happened before. The shechita creates a presumption of heter. Eisvei. To which the Gemara asked a very interesting brisa. Ra'at hipor hamanaker b'teina. V'achbar hamanaker b'avatichim. You see a bird that it's pecking at this fig. Or you see a rat that is pecking away at some melons. Now that in and of itself is not a problem, but a hole that is found in a melon is a problem, because it could have been made by a poisonous snake. In those days, we're no longer makpid on these halachas, but in those days when we had to be makpid on gilui, mayim giluyim and so on, where there were poisonous shratzim that were around, and the derech was that a sheretz would come out, drink from something, or puncture a fruit, and perhaps leave some nerve poison behind, then if you had any indication that there was a hole, you wouldn't be able to eat it, because it's dangerous.
And a rat nibbling it is not a dangerous thing.
What's that?
A rat nibbling it is
not a dangerous thing. No, it's dirty, but it's not poisonous. So cook it. But you can't cook away poison.
Were there things like this actually, or did they just use this as...
No, things were like this, because we changed the halacha. So, there it says, in that case, you have to be choshesh. Here it says, the tzipor and akbar, I see them, just like the ze'ev. I see the ze'ev. But nonetheless, I didn't see it before to know whether there was a hole there previously. And the halakha then is choshesheim sheba b'mekam nakev nikev. You're not allowed to eat that watermelon, because you have to assume, look, there's a hole there. You never can tell. There might have been a hole there before, and therefore it might be poison. So you see that you do assume that there's a chashash of a hole that was in place before a hole that you know was made.
So why can't you just wash the akbar drops there?
You can't wash off the poison. No, on my leg.
He dies. If he eats with a snake, he's
right. Maybe you could. On my leg, me come and damis isur le sakam. I don't understand. What kind of crazy question is this? You're bringing me a raya from a case that a guy shouldn't eat something because he might drop dead. So therefore, if there's a suffix insert, it should be usur. What's the comparison? A sakana is more chamur. We're not going to let you take a chance on your life. We'll let you take a chance on doing an insert. That's the difference. The suffix insert has its ways of being paskined. But we're certainly not going to say ways of being paskined are reason to take statistical risks. Sakana shiny? I'm like, Rabbi, I don't understand. What do you mean sakana is shiny? As far as I know, the rules of Sakana are very similar to the rules of Suffolk Yisr. Mishnah, what's the difference? The rule is Suffolk Sakanta Lachurma, Suffolk Yisr Nami Lachurma. Both of them, you have to go Lachurma. So, I mean, that means that we view this as a reasonable statistical chashash, then we should view it as a reasonable statistical chashash Lagabi Yisr. Where did you get the idea that the way that we evaluate the statistics is different for Sakana? Omalei Abai, what? Below shiny beneath surless, I can't understand. Everybody knows there's a difference. I mean, how about a septic tumor versus a rabbi? The din is, you have something that the question is whether it was the gab, a tumor versus a rabbi. And the din is that the septic versus a rabbi is tahar. But if you would leave open water in versus a rabbi, septic mayim magulin, it would be awesome, because maybe a nachash drank from it. So you see that a suffix iser is more, a suffix sakon is more common. Omar Lay said, well, what are you talking about? And I was like, let me sell it. What does that have to do with it? The reason we're making over there in the suffix tuma is not because suffix iser is lakula. It's because there's a lot of emotion we see like we learn from the sota. The Torah says over there, benit ma'ah, uses a lashon of tuma lagabe sota. And the din over there is that Bershus Arab, and there's once there's more than two people present, herself and her paramour, that the din is that there's no suffix. So we learn out from there. The Torah is telling us that's true about every suffix tuma. So if you're in Bershus Arab, again, defined not as it is by Shabbos, but by the presence of a number of people, so then just consider to be suffix tar. No? What is that? I mean, that you can't use that as a question, because that's an absolutely unique thing. We don't know the reason for that. So therefore, tumah also is dafka bereshus hayachid. Okay, Basa Vipshimi. I'll ask for another case, then I'll show you it's different. Here we have a case in which there's a sheretz, a dead sheretz, is being carried around by this chulda, and the chulda is walking over kikrot shel truma. Now, I have no idea whether it touched the dead sheretz to the truma or not, but I sure know it could have. So safek nagat, safek lo nagat. The suffix over there is tahor, and that's even in Rishus HaYochid, the suffix is tahor. And yet the question about Mayim Megulim in a similar case would be asur. No, that's also Sugimir Lomi Sota. One of the things that we learn from Sota is, where is there considered to be a halachic suffix with Abituna? And just like a Sota, Dover Sheish Ba'adat Lishael. I mean, we can ask the woman, were you nitnate or not? So that we can ask. Last time I tried talking to a loaf of bread, I got absolutely no response. It's almost as bad as Dafyomi. So the Shaila is, if you cannot give a response, then there's no din of Sofek Tuma. That's also Lofa Lavoshim Yisinai. And therefore, Ma Sota Dover Sheish Ba Da'at Mishael, Apachanani Dover Sheish Ba Da'at Mishael. But bring me a case where you don't have these special issues involved, and show me an example where sakana is more common. Om Rav Ashi, I'll show you exactly. Tashma, tzluchit shenicha megula. Now you had the tzluchit that you used to take the mayim for the pora aduma. You left it uncovered. Uba umatza mechusa, and now you walk in and, wow, somebody covered it. Well, the din over there is that not only is it possible for Kiddush of the Efer Parah, because you can't use two mayim that are tmeim, but it would also be metame, and it's metame to Erchun Mashkin would be metame. Why? Because we have to assume it didn't cover itself, and therefore I'm Yomer, Adam Tamei Nichnas L'Sham V'Chisa. Probably somebody walked in, I mean, how do I know if he was tar or not? But in the opposite case, where he nicham mechusa, I leave the tzluchit covered, uba umatza megula, I find it uncovered. So now I have to think to myself, im yecholach chulda lishtot bimeh, o nachash, l'divir Rabban Gamliel, o shiereg batal balayla, tzula. The only question I have over there of making it a problem for the mechatas is it possible that the type of animal that will regurgitate some of the water that takes it to its mouth, either something that laps, or something that sucks and then releases the pressure and some of the water goes back in. Now over there you have a problem. The main problem, according to Rishonim, is that you need Mayim Chaim El Keli. And over here, once it's put into another container, even if that container is the mouth of an Achash or of a Chulda, being put back into there is no longer Mayim Chaim El Keli. Rashi brings that there's also a pshat that he heard that it's considered to be nifsal because having once taken this water out, it's as if a malacha was done with the water. Since the animal takes out the water to drink it, even though it subsequently releases it, it's considered to be nasa malacha, which Tosfos doesn't like at all. And sticks with the other pshat that Rashi says that he heard, which is the one I said, that it's not Mayim Chaim El Keli.
Why
don't you say Adam Tamei? Oh, that's it. Maybe my time. Why is it all of a sudden that we're not worried about the Adam Tamei in this case? In other words, the norm would be that if you've got a question over here to be, you could be told something that falls off of the container, not only in an Adam. You can be told it also in an animal. Now, if you're going to be told it, so now your suffix consists of this. Maybe it was an Adam, and maybe it was an animal. Even if it was an Adam, maybe it was an Adam Tar. So over there, you have more studying that it's kosher, unless the animal itself would have passed the water. So it's a type of animal. It's an area in which you have chudot and nechashim, according to Rabbi Gamliel. Not everybody holds that a nachash passes through haka'ah. Rabbi Gamliel shitas in the Mishnah that a nachash is also meki, and therefore will pass the mayim for the pora. So then that's the simple svara over here. So now the question is, v'yilu safik mayim agulim, asurim. But when it comes to suffix mayim megulin. You don't need to even have a catalyst for a suffix, do you? If I left the tzluchis, note that the only cases over here are I note a change in the status of the tzluchis. I left it mechuseh, now it's megulah, I left it megulah, and now it's mechuseh. How about if I just left an open container? I would have absolutely no reason to say that it's possible for the mechatas. Can I drink it? No. Why not? Maybe a nochash drank from it. I don't understand. So why is it kosher for the mechatas? So what do you see? That you're not even ma'orer a suffix when it comes to the isser, and yet you take for granted that you have to take into consideration the outside possibility that maybe it's dangerous. Which proves that for danger, you have to be more aware and more proactive than you do for a suffix isser. So there you go. And that proves Chamir Shmamina, Chamir Sekant and Isra Shmamina. That is absolutely the proof.
This is the source of
this. This is the source of it. Of Chamir Sekant and Isra. Tnan Hasa. Shloshan Bashkina Surim Mishum Gilui. There's three types of liquids that have a problem with Gilui because they're attractive to dangerous Shrasim. Mayim, the Yayim, the Chalav. The Kama Yishuv Yu Asurim. What's the Shiur that makes them Isra? With Mayim Megulim, Kidei Sheyetze Harechash Mimakom Karov VeYishteh. Long enough for something to have gotten there without your noticing that it got there, and drink. And what do we mean long enough? How close might that place be? Kama Makom Karov Amri B'Sabrei Reviyuda Kidei Sheyetze B'Tachatos and Kli. Unless you checked the Kli itself, you don't know that there's something that's not hiding under the handle. That's also called the Makom Karov. But the refesh, the sheker, the sheriff, can crawl out. But what do you mean long enough to crawl out and drink? If it's only long enough to crawl out and drink, why don't I see it drinking? I mean, this is the mama bear. We're talking about the papa bear. You're giving me a shear in which it's still there. So if it's still there, she's sleeping there right now. So why, exactly, so why doesn't he see, why don't we see Goldilocks? You're right, says the Gemara. Obviously, we didn't say that right. So why aren't you seeing it? I mean, long enough for it to drink and get back to its hiding place so that I don't see it. Yeah. Yes. Yain the kalav tachat l'shoncha, avalo b'kli megula. Sure. We're going to see later on, we've even got crazy snakes that drink beer. But the Gemara says if it's a crazy snake, you can't bring a riot.